Welcome into the Future Sox Roundup. My name is Elijah Evans, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Jeff Cohen. We are back with another exciting episode of the Roundup. We've got a ton to talk about today. Jeff was in Winston and Kannapolis this past week, catching some of the lower-level games. We've got some interviews that he did to talk about. We've got a lot of player performances, some interesting stuff going on at the major league level. The White Sox are coming off a sweep this weekend, believe it or not. They won as many games this past weekend as they had in their first 25 games combined. It's an interesting week in the White Sox organization. And on top of that, for the first time this season, Jeff, all four affiliates won their series this week. So pretty exciting time for the White Sox minor leagues. We have a ton to talk about today. We've got our hitter of the week. We've got our pitcher of the week. We've got a fun little stat thing I'm going to pull up. We've got all of our levels to talk about, especially Kannapolis being highlighted today. As Jeff got to talk to some guys there, got to really see what's going on at you know, single A Kannapolis this week. So we're going to talk about a little bit of everything, and then we're going to finish up with corner infield depth. Last week, we talked about the middle infield depth in the system. A little preview, the corner infield depth is not much stronger than the middle, but it's still a little bit better. There's some intrigue there in the corner infield spots. There's some players that we're going to highlight for sure. To start us off, the records right now as we stand after a strong week, Charlotte is 12-14 after a really rough start to the season. They have some talent that's been added to the team, and they look like a pretty solid AAA club right now. Birmingham continues to be the cream of the crop in AA, 15-6 now through their first 21 games. They have lost one game in their last two series combined. So Birmingham looks really good. Winston-Salem, a little bit rougher right now compared to the others at 9-12. Still some good things in Winston. We got some talent that's been added to that roster in the past few weeks. And there's some more on the way, I think, in terms of some guys in Canny that should be there fairly soon, and also some 2023 draft guys that have still yet to make their way to Winston-Salem. And then Kannapolis rounding us out at 11-9. Kannapolis, for a team with a lineup that we kind of didn't expect to see much from, Kannapolis has played even better than we expected, led by a really strong pitching staff and, you know, now some hitters that have kind of surprised us in cool ways. So that's where we're at right now. How are you feeling about the week, Jeff, before we dive into everything?
You know, it's interesting. You talked about all four affiliates with winning records. And I wonder, I suspect we have to go back years to find the last time that happened.
In a series, all in winning the series. Yeah, especially with six-game series, right? Because it's easy to tie a series, but all four won their series outright this week. Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty tough to do. And, you know, one other thing, another league is getting ready to start, rookie ball. So,
yeah.
And the sooner that starts, the sooner we'll see some of those guys in Kannapolis. So that's
exactly. We've heard very good reports about second round pick Grant Taylor. I've been hearing some things from Arizona about how he's been looking really, really sharp in his scrimmage game so far. He struck out major leaguer TJ Friedl a few days ago. I saw something about that. So, you know, he's going to be an exciting guy. George Walkow, another top pick from this past year. There's a lot of players that are going to be in the ACL and then will eventually make their way to, you know, Kannapolis, Winston, whatever it may be. So you're exactly right. There's even more talent on the way.
All right.
We'll start with the major league level briefly before we dive into all of our minor league stuff. In the past week, we talked last week about Nick Nastrini getting sent back down to AAA. A few days ago, Jonathan Cannon goes back down to AAA after his third major league start. And Dominic Fletcher, which is an interesting one, gets sent down in favor of Rafael Ortega after a little bit of a rough start to the season from Fletcher. There was a few good moments from Fletcher, but all in all, there's some things the team thinks he needs to work on. So, you know, while Charlotte is looking better than they have in a while, it brings up this question again of what is the priority right now? And I think a lot of people will disagree with me on this because I do get the idea that you have a few months of trying to get some winning baseball, giving these guys time to develop in the minors. But I also personally, in the modern era of baseball, I think there is worlds where players can develop just as much at the major league level while they're struggling than they can in Charlotte. So especially pitchers. I think Charlotte is just kind of being the most hitter-friendly ballpark in AAA, right? It's a tough place to develop truly as a pitcher. And that's why part of me just wants some of these guys to just be thrown in and just say, here you go. Instead of, you know, Brad Keller now taking the spot of Cannon, you've got guys like, you know, Rafael Ortega now in Fletcher's spot, and then you've got Chris Flexen back in the rotation in favor of Nastrini. So what do you think about just kind of the status of the roster and the fact that Tommy Pham was brought in, right? So this roster right now is a lot of veteran one-year deal type of guys. What does that say to you right now, Jeff?
Yeah, and Clevinger's starting tomorrow in Charlotte. He'll be going up soon. I really think my gut tells me that it's just Chris Getz doesn't want to have the worst record ever in the major leagues, and he wants to get some wins, and he knows the best way to do that is with these major league veterans. And I just have to hope at some point, I continue to think he will. I don't know when, but at some point he's going to pivot to the younger guys, and hopefully ride it sooner than later. But I just don't think he wants to end up with 130 losses.
Yeah, that's what it seems like, and that's okay, and I get that. And I'm the big promoter of kind of just get the prospects there and go for it. But at the same time, like if this is the plan for May and June, that's okay. If this is the plan for May, June, July, and August, then I'm going to be a little frustrated, right? That's the difference there, I think.
One other thing, Elijah. So with all these moves, there were a lot of 40-man moves, 40-man roster moves. Did any of those surprise you?
It was about right. Bailey Horn got the DFA. I think I mentioned him last time as one of the pitchers that possibly could get a DFA. I'm kind of surprised we haven't seen a DFA yet from a guy like – I mean, I guess Justin Anderson's been really good, to be honest. I think that's one of the other guys I had listed as a veteran that could be DFA, but I think he might end up being a major league option for the bullpen this season because of all – you know, once you get an injury or two, he's been good. So I think that's a guy you can plug in the bullpen as opposed to Horn where he just wasn't quite ready yet. So that kind of made sense to me. I think there's a few other interesting moves. Generally, it makes sense, I think. I think it kind of – it checks out, all things considered. Fletcher being demoted, you had to – you know, Ortega had to come on. So it was interesting, but I'm not – I can't say I'm super surprised. I think I'm trying to remember. Davey Garcia was DFA'd. That's Remillard. The one where – Davey Garcia – right, Remillard too. Yeah. Davey Garcia has not been good, and I'm fine with the DFA. I would have rather DFA'd Dominic Leone personally over one of those guys. I think Leone's just been terrible and is not part of the future either. So it's like I don't really get why he's on the roster over some of the younger – I mean, even over Bailey Horn, frankly. I would have rather just seen Horn get a chance in the big leagues than Leone at this point. So that one was the one that was a little confusing to me, why Leone wasn't one of the DFA's. But that – I guess it makes sense. Moving on from Pilar made sense if you're going to – obviously, Tommy Pham just kind of took that spot straight up. And then – the other one that was, it was Remillard. So, yeah, it all mostly makes sense, I think. And nothing is too crazy. And the other thing about these DFA guys, right, is, like, I don't think many of these guys are going to get claimed on waivers. So, like, a guy like Remillard's probably going to pass. He should be fine. Same thing with, you know, I think Bailey Horn, maybe that's the one who I could see getting claimed by someone. But he could also just pass through waivers and go right back to Charlotte. So, we'll see what happens. It all mostly made sense other than Leone not being DFA'd to me.
Right. Yep. I agree. Yeah.
So that's the major league level. We don't need to get too much on that. That's not what we are here for. We are here to talk about the minor leagues. Like we said, a great week from all the affiliates, a lot to talk about. This was the first week where I actually really struggled to pick the hitter of the week. We were texting back and forth a little bit about it, Jeff, and it was interesting because there was a lot of guys that hit well this week. And same thing on the pitching side, right? There was one pitcher who, you know, had, you know, we'll get to him soon, but he had two starts. So that kind of put him over the hump, right? But in general, like this, there was a lot of players that could fit in this hitter pitcher of the week category this week. Hitter of the week, we decided to go with Jacob Gonzalez. And Jacob Gonzalez, I think it's more of a combination of the last 2 weeks in general, but I think this week shows it well. He had 8 hits this week, 2 doubles, a walk, a stolen base. Jacob Gonzalez looks like he's coming into his own. I think last year it was this consistent question of, you know, it was rough, right? It was a rough start to his professional career, and that's undoubtable, right? That's okay. And a lot of people, including myself to a degree, was a little bit skeptical about, you know, what he could be in the future. And right now he is not amazing. He's not lighting the world on fire, but Gonzalez looks like a pro and he looks like someone who could be a potential piece for the future. His approach looks good. You know, this is a guy who walked a ton in college. He had a really good approach. Right now this season, 12 walks and only 9 strikeouts for Gonzalez, right? That's the biggest thing that immediately stands out to me is he's getting on base and he's patient at the plate. On top of that, the swing looks more comfortable, right? 4 doubles, a homer, and a triple, right? So 6 extra bases. It's nothing crazy. Again, it's not jumping off the board at you, but he looks more comfortable at the plate. He's having better at bats. He's approaching things more professionally in general, I think, just with his at bats. And he looks like he's coming into his own as a player.
I wish we had access to hard hit rates.
Yeah, me too.
For him. I'd like to know just how hard he's actually hitting the ball because everything right. else is trending up. And, you know, it's interesting. You talk about him having more walks than strikeouts, and which reflects his great plate discipline. You know, last week you and I talked about the corner infield depth or really lack thereof. I mean, the middle infield depth and lack thereof. But two of the three guys we talked about were Gonzalez and Colson Montgomery. And what are they both known for? Great plate discipline.
Yeah, exactly. So Gonzalez is someone that I think we we came into this year saying like, this is now it's time to see what he can do, right? Last year was not a true show of him as a player. It wasn't a true show of kind of his abilities. And this year, right, he's at 20 games into the season in Winston-Salem. He's hitting in the heart of the order at the three spot most games, and he looks comfortable. He looks like he's taking good at bats, and I think he's going to continue to produce more in terms of the numbers, right? Like, they're not popping out at you. A 720 OPS doesn't look amazing yet, but, you know, 356 on base percentage. He's getting on base. He's taking good at bats, and Gonzalez looks like the potential big leaguer that we thought he was, you know, and everybody thought he was when he was drafted last year, and that's a great sign to see for a guy who had a rough first go in the pros last year.
Right. And, you know, I'm getting up to Winston-Salem regularly, but I wanted to give him a few more weeks to see how he goes. And then I thought maybe middle to late May, check in with him and see where his head's at.
Yeah, definitely. That's going to be exciting to get that from you. As always, everybody, make sure you're checking out Jeff's interviews. He had some great stuff from Candy this week, and he's going to have stuff from Candy, Winston, and Charlotte all season. There was other guys for the hitter of the week that we kind of also had some honorable mentions, but we're going to get to those later, I think, because all three of those guys are guys that we have on our list of players to talk about today. Before we dive into our pitcher, on the hitting side of things, Jeff, I want to ask you a little bit of a trivia question. I put together a tweet today of there is seven players right now in the White Sox organization that have a WRC plus of 130 and above. So for those who are listening, WRC plus, right, it kind of quantifies weighted runs created. It shows kind of the offensive production relative to the level and the field and, you know, all these other aspects that it brings into the formula. So there's seven guys. And the 100 is the average mark, right? So 130 plus means 30% better than the average hitter at their respective level. So seven players in the White Sox organization right now have a 130 or higher WRC plus. Four, I'll give you a little bit of a hint, and then I'm going to see if you can get some of these. Four are from Birmingham, and then the remaining three are from the two lower levels of Winston and Canny. Wow. These are among qualified hitters.
Okay. That one of the reasons that's difficult is Canny and Winston-Salem are both hitting around 200 for the season. But let me take a shot at it. I think I can think of three easy ones. I think easy ones from Birmingham: Veras, Baldwin, and Terrell Tatum.
Those are three. That's not the third one I thought you were going to say. Those are three of them. There's a fourth one that is towards the top of this list, actually.
And it's in Birmingham, and we know it's not.
He's hit a lot of home runs.
Oh, who am I missing? It's not Burke, and it's not Elko, and it's not Ramos.
Yeah, you're going to beat yourself up a little for this one, because this one is, he's leading the organization in home runs right now.
Oh, this is going to drive me nuts. Who's the fourth one?
Behind the dish, Edgar Caro is the fourth one of that list. Yes. I know you know that. So those are the four. Those are the four in Birmingham. That's the top four from the lineup, right? It's been the order in Birmingham most of this season. It's been bouncing around a little bit, but generally speaking, it's been Tatum, Baldwin, Caro, and Veras in the four of the top five hitters every game for most games for Birmingham. Brooks Baldwin, for reference, Jeff, a 220 WRC plus right now, which is fifth. It's fifth in all of minor league baseball of every level right now is Brooks Baldwin, and then Veras and Caro closely follow him as well. So just ridiculous stuff from Birmingham's lineup. We'll get into it a little more later, but those are the four from Birmingham. And then there's three, one from Winston and two from Kannapolis so far.
I think in Kannapolis, I'm going to go with my man, Ryan Gallaney.
Gallaney's not qualified yet. So he did not make this list because he only has six games under his belt or whatever it might be.
Caden Connor.
Caden Connor is one of them. Caden Connor is another person we mentioned as a possible hitter of the week, and we were talking about this. A 19th rounder last year, for those who don't know, out of Cal State Fullerton. I actually saw Caden Connor. I didn't even realize this when he was drafted. And then looking back, I saw Caden Connor play in college last year, which is kind of cool because I go to Santa Barbara where we are able to see Fullerton. So I remember Caden Connor vaguely from last season, and now he's in the organization. And a 134 WRC plus from Caden Connor in his first professional season so far.
Wow. And then let's see, Winston-Salem.
Got one in Winston and one in Candy still.
Oh, oof. In Winston, I'm thinking Jacob Gonzalez just.
Not quite. It's not Gonzalez. He's below that. He's around 118 right now, I believe. This is a guy who, again, home runs kind of scale a little bit heavy early in the season just because they are a little bit, they pull up the numbers a little early in the season. So this is a guy who I believe leads Canny in home runs so far.
I think that's Wes Caff.
It is Westcath. Westcath with a 148 WRC plus for Westcath. Wow. Yeah. So this is a guy, this is someone he's on our segment. We'll talk about him a little more later probably, but Westcath, for people who don't know, right? Second round pick in the same draft as Colson Montgomery 3 years ago. This was a guy who was, it was like, wow, the White Sox got two legitimate prep high school guys that are going to take some time, but have a ton of upside. It has not been pretty for Cath. He has really struggled. The strikeout rate has been higher than almost anybody in the organization. He has the power, but he really hasn't showed it at the fullest of his abilities. Cath looks different this year, Jeff. I have to say, from the amount I've watched him, he looks more succinct with his swing, and he looks more ready to pick and choose the pitches he knows he can damage, right? So the strikeout rate is still high for Cath, but he just looks like a different hitter, and a hitter who's ready to tap into that, just the upside that he has. So I'm excited to see what Westcath does the rest of the season. You got to remember, right, high school pick, he's only 21, right? So he's going to be 21 for almost this entire season still. So 4 home runs so far this season, an 853 OPS, a 148 WRC plus, as I just mentioned. And Cath, after spending all of last year in Winston-Salem, looks like a completely different hitter this year in Winston-Salem. I'm very excited to see what else from Cath. We've got one more on this list from Kannapolis, and someone that we've mentioned him a little bit on this podcast.
I think I know who it is.
Let's get your guess.
Ronnie Hernandez.
It's not Ronnie Hernandez. Actually, Ronnie Hernandez was up there a few weeks ago at the beginning of the season. It's had a rough week or two for Hernandez. The last one is Albertson Ossian.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, this is a guy who I think I posted this online, and a few people I don't think had ever heard of Ossian. He's someone who I kind of noted as like a, let's keep an eye on this guy, because he was released in spring training by the Red Sox. Kind of confusing to me, because last year in his first stint of single A ball in 42 games, he had an 870 OPS within the Red Sox organization, comes over to the White Sox, has an 804 OPS so far this season. He's been on base a lot. He walks at a pretty good clip, 10 walks now, 8 stolen bases, a little bit of power, 2 home runs. Ossian is someone who I'm definitely going to keep an eye on. He's a little bit older for that age, right? So I'd like to see him in Winston, honestly, sooner than later, just because he did play in single A last year, right? But he's someone, a 141 WRC plus for Ossian so far. So the last guy on that list, he under radar guys, right? There's nobody, I don't think many people are looking at the name Albertson Ossian and Caden Connor and thinking of anything, right? But at Kannapolis, they both look really solid and have been kind of some of the hitters in that lineup that have been producing in a lineup that hasn't been all that great. So cool to see. And it's exciting to kind of just look in some of these players that are, a little bit under the radar, right?
Right. Yeah, you're right. It's the four of them, Hernandez and Ossian and Connor and Galani. Those are the four guys who are hitting right now.
That's been the majority of the offense for sure. So that's exciting. Going over to pitcher of the week, and then we got a good mention of some of those under the radar guys we wanted to talk about today regardless. But going over to the pitcher of the week, I went with Kai Bush this week, Jeff. And Kai Bush is 2 weeks in a row that the way Birmingham's doing things right now, right? They have 5 starters in 6 days a week. So they're just kind of going in a normal MLB style rotation, not worrying about, one start a week. Whoever starts the Tuesday game is also starting the Sunday game right now. So just like last week where Mason Adams got this award for doing well twice against the same team in a week, Kai Bush this week, twice against the same team in 1 week, did not allow a single run, Jeff. This is a guy who we've said this before. Kai Bush is talented, right? That's a given. We've seen the talent. He was one of the better pitchers in minor league baseball in 2022 and looked like he had a lot of upside, and then was kind of the secondary piece tacked on alongside Edgar Caro in that Giolito trade last summer, which in hindsight could end up being one of the coolest trades in a while for the White Sox, honestly. And Bush now in 2 starts this week against Chattanooga, 11 innings total, only 6 hits allowed, 7 walks, and 14 strikeouts in those 11 innings, right? So with Bush, the command is the issue, right? 7 walks in 2 games is a lot. We want to see that come down. We want to see him to start to find a little bit more consistency with his command, but he's not getting hit at all this season, Jeff. 14 hits allowed total in 21 and a third innings so far this season from Kai Bush across his 4 starts. He's got a 1.27 ERA, and the strikeout numbers continue to rise. He has 7 strikeouts in 3 of his 4 starts this season, including the 2 this week.
Yeah, that's phenomenal. I was in Kannapolis, and a couple of White Sox roving instructors were there, and I was talking to one, and we were talking about he had just come from Birmingham. We were talking about the rotation, and I said, if you're an opposing team, you hope you draw Kai Bush as the pitcher. because you don't want to face Thorpe. You don't want to face Iriarte.
Maybe you want Adams, maybe, but not even really.
Yeah, they're great. Maybe Adams, maybe Eater, maybe Bush.
But none of them are great options. That's the thing. They're all excellent. And we're going to talk about him later when we talk about Birmingham. But the other guy we just mentioned, Jake Eater, was also phenomenal this week, right? So it's like this rotation is nails top to bottom. This week, Kai Bush really showed out. He had two starts against the same team. Again, like we mentioned last week with Adams, right? Like it's really hard to face the same team twice, especially on the road, and go in there and do the same thing, if not better. Kai Bush's second start was better than his first start. Four walks and four hits allowed in that first start. Comes in the second start a few days later, two hits, three walks. That's it. Nothing else. Seven strikeouts again. Bush looks good. It's hard to – we joked about this earlier. The camera work in Chattanooga is definitely hard to watch a little bit. Their camera is at a place where you really can't see the pitches. So I'm not going to act like I could tell exactly the movement on Kai Bush's stuff this week because it's hard to see. But the numbers look great. He looked confident. He was throwing at a good pace, just consistent, looked like a really good pitcher. And he's someone that, you know, we want to see what Kai Bush does this year. He's 24 years old. He's going to be 24 all season. Let's see him get to Charlotte later this year. Let's see him maybe push for a few appearances in Chicago later this season, right? Like I want to see what can happen with all these guys in Birmingham and where this season can take them, because they all five of these guys are not that far away from being MLB pitchers. And it's just each start is just more and more confidence that these guys are building up in Birmingham right now.
And I'm wondering if what's going to set all this in motion is when they start bringing guys from Arizona to Kannapolis.
Exactly.
They start promoting up and up and up.
But it all comes down to whether, like we said earlier, it all comes down to when they're willing to give that youth in the big leagues time to shine. Because there's going to be a logjam at some point, right? Like when does that – it's the two factors, right? It's both it starts from the top and it starts from the bottom in a weird way where you need those guys in Chicago. You need the guys in Charlotte to go to Chicago in order to then bring the guys in Arizona to Canny, to Winston, to Birmingham, to Charlotte. It's a chain reaction, right? But it takes both the top and the bottom kind of moving in unison, right? So it's going to be interesting to watch. But this week was a week for Kai Bush for sure. He was excellent. Let's get moving towards our levels. We're going to go through each level with an emphasis on Kannapolis at the end of this and then talk the corner infield depth at the end. A quick breeze through Charlotte this week, Jeff. Oscar Colas continues to look good. What are you seeing from Colas as we continue to kind of consider when he could be making his way to Chicago, right?
Well, it's frustrating, isn't it? I mean, he and Sosa just can hit. They can hit in their sleep in AAA. And can they figure out how to take it to the next level? Colas looks like a much more patient hitter. He's hitting the ball hard. He's playing better defense. You know, he looks ready. And so, again, hopefully he'll, you know, maybe by July, hopefully sooner than later, he'll get that shot again.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. It's tricky, right? It's hard to figure out when, but the walks are up, the strikeouts are slightly down from last year. You just see him looking. The doubles, eight doubles stands out to me a little bit. Eight extra base hits total. Good stuff overall from Colas. He looks better. He looks like a more patient, more sophisticated hitter, and someone that we're excited to see at the big league level. Lenin Sosa, like you mentioned. It hurts to see this, Jeff. I really want to see Sosa start to hit at the big league level. Unfortunately, he got sent down after that game where he made one of the worst plays I've ever seen from the White Sox, unfortunately. And it just, you know, it's you're at the point now where it's like, is he just a quad A player? I don't know. It's hard. I mean, you know, he right when he goes back down to Charlotte, he's got an 1164 OPS since being in Charlotte. So it's like, I don't know what the future holds for Sosa. It's going to be tricky. I think there's a chance he ends up being a trade candidate, a DFA candidate at some point later this season. He's mashing, right? He looks great in Charlotte, but he's gotten two chances now in Chicago to show something, and it really hasn't come. So maybe he needs three full months in Chicago later this season. I don't know, but it's tough for Sosa right now.
Well, this is the season to give him a shot, and at some point, hopefully they move on from Nicky Lopez, give Sosa a shot, I actually think maybe Colas goes up at the trade deadline.
Oh, it makes some sense.
And they move. Who's the veteran outfielder they just brought up?
Fam. Yeah.
Yeah.
Trade Fam or something. Yeah.
That's probably flip him at the deadline. Everybody
cash in on Fam. Yeah, exactly. That's a good point.
Off their bench. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's good there. And then Jared Schuster had a pretty good start this week. I want to mention him as well. What did you think of his start? And then, again, it's sort of a logjam at this point, weirdly, of pitchers that could get major league starts, but when will they get major league starts? And then who's the priority, right? Because we've seen Nestrini and Cannon get their shot. Schuster get one up for a little bit. It's a little hard to tell what the deal would be, but I think what do you think could be Schuster's kind of path to big league innings later this season?
Well, I think two things work in his favor, as well as Cannon and Nestrini. And one is that, unfortunately, big league pitchers break down all the time. And, you know, it takes like 10 starting pitchers to get through most major league seasons. So right. Some guys are going to get hurt and they're going to need some spot starts from these guys. And second, there just aren't that many relievers in the minor leagues on the 40-man roster anymore. You know, Baroa just got called up.
Right.
And so they may need to put Schuster in the bullpen.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. Yeah, long relief, that's kind of what he did the two games he came up. And he was solid with Chicago the two games he pitched out of the bullpen, right? So, and two solid starts since he went back down to Charlotte. One run allowed in each of his two starts. We should have mentioned Baroa, too. That's another guy that I'm excited to see at the big league level. Leisure's been great. And then Baroa, those two kind of having two young prospect relievers up there is going to be fun to watch. Anything else from Charlotte? I think that about covers it.
No, they're playing winning baseball ever since that first week getting hammered by Norfolk.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, they've got all these veteran hitters, so you knew they were going to score runs, but they're getting starting pitching. And, you know, Nestrini's back, Cannon's back, Chad Kuhl, Justin Anderson at the back end of the rotation. So as long as they have pitching, I think they'll be competitive. But again, you know, what does it matter?
Right, which is cool to see, but it's, you know, we got to see some of those guys make a leap and be productive at the major league level, right? That's what AAA is, right? Like, you want those guys to then get elevated and continue to perform at the highest level, right? So that's what it's going to come down to. But Charlotte is in a solid spot right now, I would say. Going over to Birmingham, we talked Kai Bush. That he was great. That rotation just looks amazing. The other guy, you know, we've talked about all these rotation guys a ton. I do want to highlight Jake Eater a little bit this week, who had definitely his best start of the season so far this past week as well. Six innings for Eater, who hasn't made it out of the fifth in any start so far this year. Went six full, four hits, two runs, two walks, eight strikeouts. Two starts in a row with eight strikeouts for Jake Eater. So starting to feel the stuff a little. It's coming out a little sharper. Again, this week it was hard to watch the pitching. It was kind of impossible to tell what the pitchers were doing in Chattanooga. But at the same time, Eater's numbers look good. He looked solid on the mound. He looked steady. You know, only two walks as opposed to four the week before. So it's similar thing with Bush, right? You want to see the command come get a little better, and you want to see the strikeouts continue to rise. And we've seen a lot of strikeouts the past 2 weeks from Eater, and he looked good, and he was able to go long. He went six full innings on 94 pitches, I believe, right? So this is a guy that hasn't been able to make longer starts yet, and that's a six-inning quality start from Eater.
Yeah, just a phenomenal rotation. It's going to be fun to watch all year, fun to see who gets moved up when. You follow Birmingham a lot closer than I do. Any interesting arms in the bullpen to follow up these starters?
That's a great question. I had a few written down here that I was gonna mention a little bit today. There's really a handful in Birmingham that have been very solid, whether it's surprising or not. Gil Luna is the first one that comes to mind. Luna has gotten two save opportunities and converted on both of those so far for Birmingham. They kind of use a closer by committee. It's not really a closer duty there. But in six games for Luna, seven innings pitched, only three hits allowed, four walks and 11 strikeouts, as well as having one of the best pickoff moves I've ever seen. Luna picked off a guy this week as well. So Luna has been really good. He's been lights out. Three hits allowed, right, in seven innings is rather impressive out of the bullpen. He's a little funky, little lefty, right? He's not going to blow you away. His stuff isn't overwhelming. But Luna is someone who struggled last year. He had some injuries. He kind of just was battling his way through things last season. And then come to this year, and he looks healthy. He looks good. He looks like he's commanding the zone well. So Luna is someone I definitely have my eye on. And then beyond Luna, there's a few others, honestly. Addison Coffey, nine innings, only four hits, one run allowed in those innings, nine strikeouts for Coffey. So another guy that we saw highlighted later in the season last year as someone who kind of could be a major league bullpen arm, right? Coffey's been excellent in the back end of that bullpen with Luna. Jordan Michael is another guy who I don't know if many people are familiar with. Jordan Michael, he was around last year. He had some injuries. injuries. I think, let me pull it up. He only threw in 15 games last season between rookie ball and then Winston-Salem when he got healthy. And his numbers were solid in Winston last year. Comes up this year and, you know, has given up a few big runs, but 20 strikeouts in 11 and two-thirds innings for Jordan Michael. So the bullpen in Birmingham, much like the starters, has also been really impressive.
Wow. Yeah, you put that pitching staff with that offense. Holy cow. It's amazing. Yeah, lost and, six games.
And what's crazy is that offense still is missing some key contributors' production, right? Like there's still a lack of production from a few guys that we expect to continue to trend the right direction, right? So right. It's really impressive. That bullpen looks good. Another one, Andrew Dahlquist too. Andrew Dahlquist is a guy who was a starter coming up and has now been converted into a reliever more. Hasn't given up a run yet. Five appearances, six in the third innings, no runs allowed, eight strikeouts. That's great. You know, it's the bullpen looks good. The starters look good. The team is just good. Like 11 of their last 12 wins now for Birmingham in the last two series, right? Like that team is just, it's a really good team. And there's a few guys coming up from Winston and then a few guys kind of elevating and continuing to produce more. Like this could be one of, if not the best teams in AA this year, like truly, even when some of these guys get elevated, like there's a lot of talent in Birmingham this season, which is pretty exciting. And that brings me to the one guy, the offensive side of things, like we talked about the four earlier that have a WRC plus above 130 and have just been great. You know, we have been waiting kind of to see this next step and what's going to happen for a few of the guys that have struggled, right? So the one I want to mention is Brian Ramos, right? Brian Ramos is the second highest ranked prospect among this team right now, or among this lineup at least, behind Edgar Caro, but they're kind of neck and neck entering the season, right? And Ramos it's been a struggle for him for sure. It's been kind of slow coming. He really hasn't found his groove quite yet. But this week was the first sign of some Brian Ramos. Brian Ramos is an energy guy. He flows. He's got a ton of passion in him. He hit his first home run this week. He had two doubles this week as well, a handful of walks. And he looked like he's getting better, slowly but surely. It's going to come along. The numbers are ugly right now still from a really rough start to the season. But this week was Ramos's best of the week so far with a homer, two doubles, like I said, you know, just starting to look a little more comfortable. His at-bats are a little bit longer. He's chasing it a little bit less often, right? So Ramos's timing just wasn't there to start the season, but it's really exciting to see him just slowly but surely start to find some things right now.
Yeah. Still so early in the season.
Yeah. Exactly. But you know, in his last four games of this series, right, the first two games he didn't have any hits, but the last four games this week, five hits, including a home run and two doubles. So a four-game stretch where we're seeing some Brian Ramos, which is really exciting. And like I said this on Twitter the other day, like if Brian Ramos and Tim Elko heat up the way that we know they can, who's beating this team? Nobody, right. Nobody's beating this team in AA right now. Like truly nobody. They're already not beating them. It's 11 of 12, right? With two of their best hitters doing very little this whole season, right? So if those two get going, it's a wraps for AA. Heading over to Winston, you were able to be in Winston for a game this week. Why don't you tell me a little bit about the starter you saw when you were in person earlier this past week and kind of what you saw from him so far?
I saw a phenomenal game from Tanner McDougal. Really impressive. Five innings, five hits, three earned runs, one walk, nine strikeouts. But four innings of shutout ball. He ran into some trouble in the fifth. But this was a guy who just had impeccable control of a fastball. He got a lot of strikeouts by just nailing that outside corner. And he got a lot of strikeouts up in the top of the zone. And then he paired that with a really strong curveball. And he got a lot of swing and miss on that. It was a beautiful performance.
Yeah, I was watching that game on TV, and I was really impressed with McDougal as well. I'm glad you got to see that in person because, again, the stat line looks misleading because that fifth inning, right? But the first through fourth inning, first four innings he threw, he was essentially perfect. The strikeouts were there. The whiff was there. He was not allowing any hard contact at all. He wasn't walking guys either, right? Like that's the thing for McDougal is coming off of TJ in 2022, last year, the walk rate was high, and that's understandable. He was getting his groove. He was finding it. This season, three walks in his first two starts, and 10 combined strikeouts, right? So his first two games, a total of six walks to 10 strikeouts. One walk, nine strikeouts in this game that you got to see this week. So McDougal looked great. And like you said, the fastball curveball is his bread and butter. And if he continues to add stuff around that and continues to refine those two pitches, right? Like it's a really good combo and it works well for him.
Right, right. And then beyond that, still more struggles for Tyler Schweitzer and Peyton Paulette. And Juan Corella kind of struggled a little bit. And then there's Noah Schultz, continuing to do what he's been doing all year. Got a kind of a cheap home run off of him. And otherwise,
And then, otherwise he was pretty solid, right? The strikeouts are still there for him. He just a little bit of command issues this past week, but nothing too crazy. And then the last starter, another guy that we mentioned last week, Riley Gowans, has been really interesting. Kind of opened some eyes, in my opinion, because this was a guy who was not really getting talked about. Was assigned to Winston-Salem. He's the last starter there. He's their Sunday starter, kind of finishes out the series for the White Sox right now. He looks pretty good. That's two starts in a row where I've been rather impressed with him. You know, this first start of the season was his worst, and since then he's been really solid. Only four runs allowed in his last three starts combined. After throwing six innings of one-run ball and eight strikeouts last week, this week he comes back and throws five innings of one-run ball with six strikeouts. Two really good starts in a row from Gowans. I have to take the time to watch a little bit more of him. I think this coming start, I'm going to try and watch the full start of his. But from the clips I saw, he looked good.
Yeah. And for those people who don't know, and probably most people don't, he was the last piece of the Aaron Bummer trade to Atlanta, along with Soroka and Schuster and
So that's it's interesting. Adler, he's been good. Gowans has been solid. And then the last guy I want to mention in terms of pitching, going over to the bullpen side of things. I've said this on Twitter like four times, Jeff. Can we please get Eric Adler to Birmingham? Eric Adler, this is via – I'm going to pull this stat up real quick. But Eric Adler has been phenomenal. He's just been great, all things considered. I don't really think there's anything to it other than the fact that he has not been touched. I'm gonna find this stat from my guy, Dylan. Dylan, at Not Cease on Twitter, is a new addition to the Future Sox team, a guy that I've been friends with for a little while. He does great work for the White Sox. Since August 18th of last season, Eric Adler has not allowed a run. Since August 18th of 2023, in 14 innings, Eric Adler has not allowed a run and has struck out 21 batters in those 14 innings.
Wow.
He's just too good to be in Winston. I'm kind of over it. At 9 innings, 8 appearances this season, not a single run allowed, 14 strikeouts, a whip of 0.78. He's just too good to be in Winston-Salem. It's really rare that you have projectable MLB projected like relief pitchers at any level in the minors, and especially at the lower two levels in the minors. So having a guy that was drafted in 2022 out of college, right? Like we saw the upside last year. It was split between Candy and Winston. He was good all season. The command was a little iffy, but he was still good. This season, the command has been even better. It's improving. The strikeouts are still there. He's allowed three hits, Jeff, in 9 innings. Three hits. Yeah. I mean, just let's get this guy to Birmingham and see what he can do. That Birmingham rotation or bullpen is already good, like we talked about. But Eric Adler could be getting saves there. He should continue to be kind of a closer role at every level he reaches, because I think he has the upside of a high leverage MLB reliever if things keep clicking for him. It's time to get this guy to Birmingham.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So that's the last guy I had there in terms of the pitching side of things. I also wanted to briefly mention Mario Camilletti, who was someone who kind of was hurt to start the season. I forgot exactly what injury he was dealing with, but he was injured and then got immediately assigned to Winston. He played most of the year last year in Canny until just the very end of the year when he got to Winston, but came back three games already. Camilletti's already got four hits. He's just a little spark plug. He gets on base. He finds ways to make the impact the game. And I'm excited to see what else Camilletti can do now that he's back in the lineup and
Winston. Yeah, he had a really strong season, a bit under the radar last year in Kannapolis, but a really strong season.
For sure.
And one last thing, just circling back to Wes Kath for a little bit. I asked the Winston-Salem manager, Guillermo Quiroz, about Wes and what was different from last year, because he was in Winston last year with Guillermo. And he said that they made some swing changes over the offseason. They tweaked his mechanics and shortened up his swing a little bit. And so far, it seems to be paying off.
Yeah, awesome. That's exciting to see from Kath. And he's been, like we said, he's been one of the best hitters in Winston and hopefully will continue to be this season. Going over Kannapolis, I'm going to just let you take the reign on this one. Kannapolis was good this week, right? Every starter, pretty much most of the starters in that rotation had good weeks. There was a lot of good starts. You've got some guys injected into the lineup from the 2023 draft, like Eddie Park, Ryan Galani. We mentioned earlier a guy like Caden Connor, Albertson Essigen. There's tons of talent. So give me some of your – you start wherever you want with some of these candy guys. And
All right. Well, I definitely want to start with the pitching staff because it really continues to impress. And let me just share a few statistics on the season. They've got the second lowest whip in the Carolina League at 1.18. They're tied for first in fewest home runs and tied for first in batting average against at 200. And all their starters look really strong this week. Drew McDaniel, another strong performance from him. Jake Peppers, ninth round draft pick from 2023, but he's looked really good. I think this week he went five innings, gave up two hits, no runs. I got a chance to talk with Aldrin Batista, and he's been unhittable. I mean, literally unhittable this year in, I think, four starts. And so I asked him what was different from last year, and he said, you know, he spent the offseason, you know, running, getting stronger, tweaking his mechanics. But he said the big change was the addition and refinement of a two-seam fastball. And he says he pairs that with his four-seam fastball and his breaking pitches. And it just makes it so much harder for hitters to figure out what's coming.
I would love that insight from you. That was great to hear because you can see it in his pitches. I've been watching Batista's two of his three starts. I've watched very carefully because I'm fascinated with him as a prospect. And you can see it. The run on his fastball is clear. The two-seam is biting on guys. It's sharp. It looks more lively than the velo on it is, actually. I think he's continuing to gain velo, too, which is really exciting because I think he's been a notch or two up from where he was last year, right? So this is a guy who throws hard. He locates. He pounds the zone, right? This stuff is good, but Batista just goes right at guys too. I'm going to let you keep going on the other guys you talked to. But just for reference for people, like you mentioned the second lowest whip, right? The ERAs of this rotation right now, Keener with a 1.53, Gordon with a 2.85, Batista with a 1.17, McDaniel with a 1.72, and Peppers with a 2.70. So that's every single guy in this rotation is under a 3 ERA, and three of them are under a 2 ERA. So this rotation has been excellent for the level.
Right. And you mentioned two of the other 2023 draft picks, Seth Keener and Lucas Gordon. You know, I talked to Seth Keener. I saw Seth pitch 2 weeks ago, and he got hit pretty hard. And so after the game, he talked about the refinements he was going to make and the way he pitched and his pitch mix. And it's paying off. I mean, the next two starts have been much better. I think this week, he four innings of hitless ball, very strong. And then this week, I also got to see Lucas Gordon and talk to him afterwards. And again, it was a lot like Tanner McDougal's start in Winston, where for four innings, he was just completely dominating. And then in the fifth inning, he gave up four hits and two runs. And I asked him after, I said, what happened in that last inning? I said, did you just get too much of the plate? And he said, no. He said, I actually made a great pitch to Trey Morgan, and somehow he got his hands in and put the ball in play. And he said, and the second hit was just a little roller down the line that just went under Gallaney's glove. So he said, you know, it really wasn't as bad as it looked. And again, three walks, six strikeouts, a really impressive performance.
Yeah. All in all, he's looked really good. Six strikeouts in each start so far, at least six strikeouts. He had seven, then nine, then six, then six, right? So this is a guy who's getting whiffs. The walks are still a little bit higher than you want to see, but first professional full season, right? Like this happens. Keener and Gordon both have some walk issues, but that's going to come down with time, and I think they just need some time to continue to settle in. And they both are showing some stuff that looks really good and looks sharp. So exciting stuff from that rotation. Flipping over to the hitting side, tell me about some of these guys that have recently been activated by the team from the 2023 draft class, in addition to some other hitters that have been pressed.
Well, Calvin Harris and Eddie Park are both back with the team. I didn't get a chance to catch up with Calvin, but I did speak with Eddie a little bit. And, I said, what was your injury? And he showed me this big scar on his left hand. He had the hamate bone injury. And I kind of recall from major leaguers, it takes a long time to come back from, and they're not quite the same immediately after the injury. So, you know, he says he feels well enough to play, but, you know, I'm going to give him a pass if he doesn't hit and would expect to see him to go to Winston sooner than later. But it's good to have him back in the lineup. Then the other guy I got a chance to chat with was Gallaney. And he was a phenomenal college hitter. I think he was like player of the year in his conference. But he played at a small school, Wofford. And so I asked him, I said, you know, what were your expectations going into the draft? And, you know, because you had a great year, but you weren't in a Power Five conference. And he said, you know, I thought I was going to get drafted. And, you know, my agent told me he thought I was going to get drafted. He said, but, you know, I had a graduate offer at another school if I needed to play one more year. He said, but, you know, the White Sox drafted me and I was excited to join the team. And a lot of people, including me, saw him at the end of last year when he appeared in the last couple of dozen games of the year after being drafted. And he turned a lot of heads then, hitting the ball sharply. Yeah. And he's continued to do that this year. He's just really, his swing looks terrific.
Nine games in for Glaney, a 10.21 OPS. He already has six extra base hits in those nine games, right? So this is a guy that's hitting the ball hard and looks good. And, you know, he can play. We'll talk about him later. We'll mention him, but good to get it detailed out now, right? Like, this is someone in terms of corner infield depth that we could see being kind of a piece, right? And then the other guy we talked about earlier, Caden Connor, another guy who, you know, corner infield mostly. He can play first. He can also play outfield too. So Connor has a lot of versatility. Two, you know, late round college draft picks from smaller schools that are now kind of looking like they can continue to rise a little bit. And at Kannapolis, right, like those are the types of players where you want to see them go up sooner than later, right? Because they have experience for many years in college, but even if it's at a lower level, right, like they've played collegiate baseball at a high level for many years. So those are the players where, like, they should be doing well in Kannapolis, to be honest, right? Like, right, we expect them to. And both Connor and Galanty have done that. So I'm excited to see kind of their continual rise and see where they get to after this.
Yeah, you're right. They're older. They have all that college experience. Low A shouldn't be a challenge, and they should get bumped really soon, hopefully.
Definitely. Yeah, that's the hope. Going into anybody else in that lineup that you kind of want to mention?
You know, it's hard to go to Kannapolis and not be entertained by Nishita. You know, he has no problem working the count, going deep in the count. And I watched him. He must have fouled off three or four two-strike pitches and finally drew a walk. And that's his game. You know, he's going to get on base. He's got a high OBP thanks to all those walks. But, yeah, that's pretty much it, except one other note about Kannapolis. I really enjoy going there. It's just a really laid-back, comfortable environment, hanging around the batting cage. I'm not as intimidated. I would never talk to a player around the batting cage in Charlotte unless he approached me first. But it's different in Kannapolis. It's a much more relaxed vibe. And I was behind the cage watching some guys hit, and there was a guy beside me. I figured he was just the hitting coach, and I didn't want to bother him. I didn't say anything to him. And he introduced himself to me, and it turns out it was Alan Zinter, who has replaced Andy Barquette as the new hitting coordinator for all of the White Sox minor leagues. Nice. Very friendly guy. Had a nice chat with him about his career and all the different places he's been. And it was just fun because every time a guy came out of the batting cage, he'd go over and work with him and give him a tip. And it's very hands-on, very much engaged. And I think he's, like Andy was a great guy to work with, I think Alan certainly will be as well. So it was fortunate just to be there and have a chance to meet him.
Good insight to have for everybody listening at AAA Jeff on Twitter. You gotta follow Jeff. I'm telling you, it's Jeff's got the, he's there. He's in person for everybody, White Sox fans, you know, myself included, right? That isn't able to see these guys live and hear from them. Like, that's a really important experience. And Jeff is there, and he's going to bring his insights here every week, which is awesome. Going over to corner infield depth, which will be our last segment of the day. We kind of talked about a lot of these guys, so we don't need to go in super depth, right? Going from kind of top to bottom, right? The corner infielders that are worth kind of noting, you got Carlos Perez in Charlotte, who's become a first baseman, which is interesting because he's always been a catcher, but with all the catching depth, he's kind of been the primary first baseman in Charlotte this year. And then Lenin Sosa has played a lot of third base. You know, he was more of a second baseman, but it seems like he's kind of transitioned into pretty frequently playing third base, whether it was with Charlotte or with the White Sox, right? Beyond that, in Birmingham, Tim Elko and Brian Ramos, that's the everyday first-third combo. Like we talked about, both guys have not gotten going yet, But both of them last year were two of the best hitters in Birmingham and in the, just in the minors in general for the White Sox, and are both, you know, incredibly strong, tons of power. Sean Gusenberg is another one going down to Winston. Sean Gusenberg, Wes Kath, as we mentioned, third baseman. Bryce Willits has been playing a lot of first for Winston-Salem. That was a draft pick, 2022 draft pick by the White Sox, late rounder. And then Ryan Gelinney, who we just talked about in Kannapolis, has been playing mostly first. Is that right, Jeff? I believe that's right.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Edric Felix as well, who was also a 2023 draft pick alongside Gelinney last year, who's been playing a lot of third base for Canny. So that's kind of the general picture of the depth, right? I think there's a few other guys that have played some third or have played some first. Caden Connor, as well, I mentioned, is a kind of corner outfield first base combo in Kannapolis. It's not great, but it's intriguing. I think, right, like Ramos is the guy we have a lot of hope for. Elko, everybody loves Tim Elko. There's a world where he figures some things out with the chase rate, and the power is obviously there at first base. Wes Kath, as we mentioned a lot about earlier, is looking like he's turning a corner to a degree, could kind of be the next third baseman behind Brian Ramos in terms of trajectory, right? Bryce Willis, Sean Gusenberg, older college guys, depth for the system. Gelinney, we're hoping, is a little bit more than just depth for the system, but at the very least, he's a experienced quality player who can play first, can play third, right? Edric Felix, great with the glove. I'm hoping the bat continues to develop a little bit. Has played third, has played short, has played second. He's kind of an infield utility guy. What do you think about the general corner infielders?
You know, we've been talking so much in the preseason about the minor league depth and how much stronger it is. And last week, I was frankly a little shocked to see how little depth we had at middle infield. And then this week, I thought, my gosh, we don't really have that much more depth at corner infield. I'm hoping the outfielders turn that around. But I think like the middle infield, we've got quality or potential quality, not quantity. You know, there are some like two number one draft picks at middle infield and at corner infield, Brian Ramos, and then the number two draft pick, Wes Kath. So quality over quantity.
Yeah.
Kind of the best way to describe it.
There's some pieces, right? Like there's definitely some pieces. I think there's also some need for additional depth. I think right now, like you're going, like last year, right, you were looking at this and saying, oh, Andrew Vaughn, first baseman of the future, Brian Ramos, third baseman of the future. Ramos off to a really rough start. Andrew Vaughn up to a really rough start in Chicago. Vaughn, it's kind of a lot of people are at the point of being like, is Vaughn really the answer at third base? Because he hasn't really progressed the last 2 years, and he's actually taken a significant decline this year in comparison to the past two seasons, right? So there's a little more question marks there. I wouldn't be surprised to see the White Sox swing big on a corner infielder in the first or even second round of the draft this year, to be honest, because I think right now it's you're looking at those positions as like, first base is kind of, if Vaughn doesn't take a big step forward the next 6 months, like kind of up for grabs moving forward. Third base, you want that to be Brian Ramos, right? But he hasn't quite solidified himself as like the guaranteed guy there. So I think this position has some depth, but it's going to need some more, and you're going to need a potential swing at a stud. Could Jacob Gonzalez move to third base? Maybe. I'm not sure the arm strength is there. I see him more maybe second base than third base, right? If he doesn't stay at short. There's a few other guys like Javier McGonnellan is someone who we talked about in middle infield depth, super, you know, really young DSL guy, Dominican guy, who looks like kind of a super ultra talented long-term guy. Also kind of profiles more as a second baseman than a third baseman potentially, has played some short, but is kind of a smaller guy, probably more of a second baseman, right? So what does the corner infield look like long-term? I don't know if there's a clear answer right now. So I could see, you know, some guys in corner infield being potentially looked at as long-term pieces, getting drafted or trying to acquire some in the offseason, whatever it might be. So we'll see what happens. But the depth in the corner infield is not the strongest, I would say.
Yeah, the depth of the system is definitely catching and more than any other position, pitching. And that's a great thing. And that's a big change from the last couple of years. I mean, there's pitching up and down the system. And you want to keep restocking every year. But you're right. I think next year they need to get a couple of corner bats, a corner bat, maybe a good outfield bat as well.
You know who else I should mention, actually? I don't want to disregard him. Eduardo Herrera was the top international signing from this past draft, from this past year, right? So 17-year-old from Venezuela signed just this past winter, supposedly has a strong arm and his profiles as a third baseman long term. He's a bigger dude as well. So suppose it should be a third, and if not third, then first. So either way, Herrera kind of is the long term piece in terms of the corner infield depth, who what I've heard and what we've seen, we haven't seen a ton from him, right? But, you know, a big signing bonus, $1.8 million given to Eduardo Herrera, someone that should be a third baseman, if not a first baseman, if he continues to get bigger, right? So another guy to mention. But yeah, there's you're right. The pitching the pitching depth is abundant, and it's amazing to see. But there is, especially in the infield, I think when we talk outfield next week, you'll be a little bit more pleased. I think the outfield depth is a little stronger overall. But the infield depth is still kind of needs some improvements, I would say, overall.
Yeah.
Anything else? I think we are good today.
I think that's it. That kind of covers everything. Another good week. Really great week for the minor league teams.
Very exciting week. And there'll be more to come. We will be here next week and the week after and the one after that. We look forward to talking to you next time on the Future Sox Roundup.